This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Take your mind back to the late 80s. In the White House, Ronald Reagan, in the closet, suspenders, and on the tube, 30-something. As the term yuppie was being bandied about with both envy and contempt, the seven men and women on the ABC primetime drama tried to navigate the boundaries between youth and adulthood, work and play, ideals and reality, love and marriage.
I used to feel sorry for other people because they weren't like us. I mean, I used to look in the mirror with her and think, how did this beautiful girl ever get fool enough to be with me?
So what happened?
What happened? Mountains wore down. Ice ages came and went. She lost interest. I didn't matter anymore. Now I think she just likes to see me squirm.
30-something is now 20-something. The first season has just been released on DVD, and we've got five of the seven original members with us. Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Patricia Wettig, Melanie Mayron, and Peter Horton are all with us. That's Michael Elliott, Nancy, Melissa, and Gary to all you fans. And though Mel Harris and Polly Draper are not here, we're going to talk about them shamelessly. Later in the hour, 30-something made us miss the silent generation, the dads of the late 50s and early 60s. Dads who appear in Mad Men, but Jonathan Zimmer says, "That's not my dad." But first, 30-something, we want to hear from you. Boomers, did 30-something reflect your life? If so, how? Gen Xers, how could you stand these people? Give us a call. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And in our bureau in New York is the cast of 30-something, Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Patricia Wettig, Melanie Mayron, and Peter Horton. Guys, welcome. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hello.
Thank you.
Do you guys think you were creating a time capsule when you were back making that program? Ken Olin, why don't we start with you?
No, I don't think we thought. Actually, listening to the clip of Tim, though, I realized that we were actually making a cartoon. But I realized it was animated. But I think we were so wrapped up in the present, actually, and it was so much a reflection of, a stylized reflection of our own lives that I don't think we thought much about. Today we feel a little bit like we've been embalmed, but I don't think so.
Patricia Wettig, a stylized representation of your life. You did fine with the cancer?
Wait a minute.
You're still here.
Ask that question again.
I was just making a joke. Anyway, this stylized representation of your own lives, how much of your own lives was in the show?
Well, actually, I'd say a lot of our lives. I don't think that we were playing ourselves as our characters. I don't believe that I was Nancy or that Ken actually was Michael. But so every married person on the show was married in real life and had kids. Every single person on the show at the time was single. And so often we would come in and talk to the producers and other writers, share stories about, okay, this is what happened last night, or what did you do about this? A week later, we'd get a script, and that very story that we had shared would be in the script. So there was a lot. We were all living the same lives. All the producers, the writers, and actors were all in our 30-something. At that time. And so, it was a lot about the way we were living at that time.
Peter Horton, you played I think a lot of women, and I have to say they were my age at the time, I think they still are, had a terrible crush on you.
Terrible crush is an oxymoron. There's nothing wrong with crushes. It was actually a great sort of moment for all of us because this show just exploded on the scene and exploded right with our peers. So it wasn't like we had this sort of huge, frantic group of fans sort of following us around. There was just this reaction to the show and to us that was wonderfully measured and wonderfully thoughtful and moved by what we were doing. And I think that sort of transcended the whole notion of crushes and fans and craziness, and it was felt downright like appreciation.
Like appreciation. Melanie Mayron, as you looked at the show, and I don't know, have you had the chance to see it before this new DVD came out?
No, I saw an episode when I did an audio commentary for the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
I cried. What was the name of the Christmas? Was it I'll Be Home for Christmas?
I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that episode just – Ken and I had a lot to do in that one. And it was just – I watched it going, my God, it's astonishing.
What was astonishing? Some of us were astonished at the ties, but
not to mention the suspenders.
Yeah, suspender.
And the shoulder pads.
And the shoulder pads.
The hairdo. Wow.
And the fact that nobody had a cell phone and there was not one computer to be seen.
Oh, and that's so funny. We were talking – this is Peter Horton. We were talking about sitting there over breakfast this morning with all of our little BlackBerries and iPhones and going, do you remember when we were on 30-something, we had our first cell phone and it was about, you know, a foot and a half long and it weighed about 20 pounds. Things have changed.
Let's see. This is Ken. I think what – because Melanie's crying now so she can't talk. But I'll speak for –
No, I'm not.
I think because you were speaking this morning about – I think it was the – how emotional some of the scenes could be or how the rhythm was slower and we could actually do longer scenes and scenes that were probably more in depth than what you're seeing now on network television.
What blew my mind about just that one episode was the writing. It was really wonderful and completely full circle. It's like everything that was brought up was serviced in the story.
But we killed it, right? You're doing our scene. We killed it. That's the thing.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, it was like we just killed it.
It's Tim Busfield. You also have to, I think, consider, look at the track record of Zwick, primarily in feature films from that.
Ed Zwick, from that
point on, and Marshall and
Glory, Last Samurai, things like that.
I mean, these are guys that understand long form storytelling, and so we were allowed to be a part of a show that took its time and stayed back and was shot like a feature. And it was very important to these guys. They shot the show like movies, and they were very smart, as they've gone on to prove. There's not a lot of executive producers in television that do a hit show that might draw the attention of 30-something and then go on to win Academy Awards and get nominated for Academy Awards. And we were really lucky that we had those guys at the helm because they allowed the show to have a unique feel because they weren't, you know, they'd come from TV, but they were feature guys. And we were really fortunate to have that level. And even Paul Haggis, who got fired, I think, at the end of the first year, goes on to, you know, get a couple of Best Picture nods and win an Academy Award for his writing. So
it was also the time we were doing it in, too. There was at that time there were three networks, and that's what people watched. So it sort of allowed for the pace and subtlety of a show like 30-something, which I think would be much harder to sell this
day. Ken's right. The scenes were long.
Yeah. And you were also lucked out by being on after Moonlighting, which was a big hit at the time.
Yeah, that
we had Moonlighting and Roseanne. I think we came in after the, you know, I don't know if Roseanne was at 9:30, but, you know, we did have good lead-ins. Yeah, it helps. It helps.
Let's see if we get a caller in on the line. We're talking with the cast of 30-something, and this is Peter from Somerville in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I got to admit, I couldn't stop watching the show, even though I hated most of your characters.
Oh, no.
Thanks, Peter. What do you do? Where do you live?
I don't know. I just thought, you know, the narcissism of the characters, of the writing, all about their problems and their concerns. Get on with it.
But you watched every episode.
Well, at least half of them.
Well, there you go.
Well, I think that – this is Patty. Hi.
Hi, Patty.
I think that's an interesting thing that – I believe that often when you're in your 30s and you're involved in marriages and the intimacy of that and the problems of that and raising children, there is an aspect of that time in your life that it reflected like that does seem narcissistic. But I think it also reflects something that is very truthful about actually being in that stage of life. And I find that a lot of our generation at that time were pretty self-involved, very involved in therapy and I don't know. I just think it was reflective of a time.
Yeah, it's Tim Busfield here. Also, too, I mean, we had an hour in which we all had to, you know, it couldn't be with the relaxed, I'm going to have an orange juice and go talk to my friend in the corner and take my time and pour my problems out over the next 3 hours. Each storyline had within the hour. So we did complain quickly and whine hurriedly and probably too much, but that was part of the dramatic form.
Peter, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Here's an email from Jack in Sacramento, California. Between the Kathy comics and 30-something, my wife and I felt we couldn't do anything original. Both seemed to either anticipate what we were going to do or just proceeded something to do something we did. Get married, have babies, job anxieties. We were both in our early 30s at the time. So I guess that reflects, Melanie, the kind of situation that you were talking about, that where everybody was in that same situation, including the writers and the producers.
Well, that's true. We were.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what – I mean, that was kind of the – I mean, I think it probably if you look at it now, it's a little more stylized. You know, there was a tone and a quality to it that they were – you know, Marshall and Ed were very, very successful at capturing whatever the patina of that or the angst and anxiety of that period was. I don't know that it was really as probably as realistic as people feel like
but
it
was
now.
Patty again. It was a show. I think so many shows now are things that are more plot driven mm-hmm. or franchise, you know, cops or lawyers, and they have those things
to run out
to.
And shout clear.
Exactly.
Believe me, that would have been great. I certainly liked at least to have a gun and a car. That would have been good.
We got to wait. Patty was the only one. She got to shoot you. Patty was the only one to fire a gun,
scene.
I think.
Yeah.
And Michael writes a story.
Fantasy.
Our guests are Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Patricia Wettig, Peter Horton, Melanie Mayron, and they are the cast members of 30-something. The first season is just out on DVD. One of the things the program did was use contemporary music to try to illustrate scenes. One example was in the episode we referenced just a moment ago, I'll Be Home for Christmas. It established this song by Joni Mitchell as a Christmas song. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 22 years ago this fall, ABC premiered the boomer drama 30-something. Though the show was only on for four seasons, it had lasting impact. Among other things, it helped that something suffix get into the Oxford English Dictionary. Now, after all these years, the music rights have finally been cleared and the DVD is out. We've reunited the cast, now 50-something. Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Peter Horton, Patricia Wettig, and Melanie Mayron are with us. And we want to hear from you if you were 30-something during 30-something. Did you see yourself? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. As much as 30-something was known for its intimate look at marriage, it also pioneered a certain view of a single woman. Melanie Mayron played free-spirited photographer Melissa, Michael's cousin, who he looked out for but didn't always rub the right way. Here he warns her about a new love interest.
I'm just saying, consider the guy's motives, that's all.
Well, I don't think I have to. I mean, you've done that for me already. I mean, you've let me see that in your eyes, there's only one way a man like that could ever be interested in me. So should I thank you now, or should I just leave?
Melanie Mayron, Melissa had a lot of fans. There she was in many ways.
That was creepy.
That is creepy. How could you stand him? He was your cousin. Do you see her as a predecessor to Carrie Bradshaw? We've read a lot about that in the some of the newspaper articles as this show comes out on DVD.
Well, you know, I certainly saw myself when I saw Ally McBeal, and you know, I think so. I think when we were cast in it, we all sort of had specific roles that you could recognize people. And Polly Draper as Ellen mm-hmm. was working for the city, so she had a job in an office. But Melissa was just the cousin, and I had suggested, what if she's become a photographer? I had been doing photography, and I thought, boy, if there could be a character that all us actors, artists, photographers, all us free spirits could identify with, then that would be a great contribution to add to it. So,
Now let's get Nancy on the line. Nancy with us from Naples, Florida.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, well, I was – it's funny. I'm in my 50s, and I'm dating. And there was one line from the show. I guess one woman was going out on a date. I can't remember which character. And she said, "Oh, my God, I feel like I'm in junior high school. When will I ever grow out of this?" And one other character said, "You never grow out of it." And, you know, and I still feel like junior high when I'm going out on a date. And I think of that line every time I go out.
Oh, that's great.
Nancy, thanks very much. Melanie, I think guilty. Was that your line?
Gee, I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Oh,
it was probably Ken referencing guilt.
Probably. I wonder, do you guys ever get together again? I mean, you worked so intensely closely together for those 4 years.
You know, this is Peter talking. It's really funny. We've gotten together in little pods of two or three from time to time. Patty and Ken and I live near each other, and Melanie actually directed me in an episode of In Treatment last year. And so we've had incidents like that, but we hadn't really gotten together as a group for about 10 years. And, you know, getting together here for this time in New York was really extraordinary, because there was no sense really that time had passed. There was no kind of getting to know each other again or awkwardness of any kind. There was like a sense that we were picking right up where we left off. And I think that's really a great sort of not only gift for us, but I think it also speaks to why one of the reasons the show worked as well as it did.
Yeah, this is Patty. I think that what Peter's talking about is a certain chemistry that helped the show work, and you feel it still when we're all together. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice blessing, actually.
Now let's get Eric on the line. Eric calling from Berkeley.
Hi, I was in college, and I watched 30-something, and they were my absolute role models, and I thought there were so many different roles to choose from, and especially when Michael celebrated Hanukkah as a Jewish person, I went, wow, I can be Jewish on TV. And when Melissa had a gay friend, I went, oh, wow, there's even gay people on TV.
this is Ken. I mean, I think it's so strange now to think back on how groundbreaking some of that was. I mean, groundbreaking to probably a little hyperbolic, but still, you know, that there had never been two same-sex people in the same bed. That was a huge deal. We lost advertisers when we aired that episode.
They actually kissed, too.
No, they didn't.
No, there's a big controversy about it.
Yeah, they didn't.
They
smoked.
Right?
That's what's really weird. When you watch the scene now, it's so weird because they're smoking. So that kind of freaked me out.
But there was a big controversy about them kissing.
We had to drop the kiss.
I thought it was in the Hal Holbrook show that they was the first gay kiss. TV.
Yeah, anyway. I don't think it wasn't a kiss.
It was that they were in bed. They were naked.
Things like that, or it was a huge deal that my character put on a yarmulke in the pilot, and you know that Melanie and I were Jewish, and I mean, things like that 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 at the time were. We're really unusual. Patty and Tim did this scene where Tim, you know, asked Patty if she ever shaves her legs anymore. And that was a huge and wildly, like, and good for your career, from what I understand.
Yeah, but still, even therapy. I mean, the idea that characters in a marriage had difficulties and went into therapy. We see that in the last 10, 15 years, we've seen it. Thousands. Everybody goes into therapy now, but that was a really unusual thing.
There were still shrinks there. This is Tim, and that, you know, Marshall Herskovitz and Ed Zwick just so brilliantly challenged everything at that level. They did not want a television show. They had movies they could do. If they couldn't make the show they wanted and make it personal, they weren't going to do it. And I don't even think they set out to be groundbreaking. I just think they were so truthful to trying to make it sound real. And like their life, that they, they hit the oil well there on that.
Yeah, this is Peter. It was really confessional in that way. It was the first confessional drama, I think, on television in that sense, that people really wrote from very intimate, personal places.
And their wives wrote with them, would write. They would break stories. They broke every story. You're not going to see story credit for those guys, but every single story came from Marshall and Ed. And then they would, you know, write them with their wives, and they'd fight, and then they'd record the fight maybe, and they'd put it in the script. And, you know, they were gonna do TV like it had never been done before, and hopefully, in their mind, get canceled and go back to making movies. I don't think they, you know, and Kenny will tell you because he's been running shows, and Peter and I've been producing shows. The good news is, I got a series that I can produce. The bad news is I got a series I have to produce. Yeah. It's tremendous amount of work. And for those guys to stay with it for 4 years and shoot Glory in the middle of it and still deliver was pretty, you know, it goes to them. It goes to Marshall's directing the pilot and being a fantastic director and great writers.
Eric, thanks very much for the call. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, you've all gone on into the television business. 30-something came out just as the Nielsen people were able to break out demographics and people realized the show was never even in the top 20 in terms of ratings, but it did very well among a very select population, 18 to 34-year-olds, and all of a sudden that became the treasured demographic. Now, as you've mentioned, several of you, I think all of you are still involved in television one way or the other. If you made 50-something, would anybody pay for it?
No.
Nope.
Not the right people. Not the people they're looking for.
You never know. You never know. It's Tim again. We were the number two moneymaker at the network after Roseanne, even when we got canceled, because ad time goes quickly into those demographics. And I don't know if something was written truthful and well-played, even if in their 50s, I think people might watch it if the writing is great. I think demographic might watch.
Oh, yeah.
Ken would have to lose some weight, but other than that, I think it would probably work great. Nice.
Yeah, that's probably true, Peter. yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, now, you know, it's Ken. I think, you know, there's that notion that the show was moderately successful or it was never in the top 20. Well, I mean, it wasn't in the top 20 probably – by the, you know, at the end of every year or whatever, given all the shows. But, I mean, it was an extraordinarily profitable show for ABC at the time because once they identified that number and that demographic, that was the most desirable demographic, you know, that advertisers could reach. So the show was actually probably much more successful than certainly as cast members we were led to believe.
Yeah. Brothers and Sisters.
See, I thought
Brothers
we were
and Sisters
hit.
Is in the top 20 a lot, and I don't think that's a show about just 30-somethings. It's Sally and Patty, and, you know, you've got that's a very strong show that does very well. And I think if it's written well and played well, I think people will watch.
Let's get Will on the line calling from Ann Arbor.
Yeah, good afternoon, folks.
Hi.
Good to hear your voices again.
Nice,
I really enjoyed your show while it was on. But I had a couple or a question and a comment. I have a suggestion, actually. First, hearing somebody say, would you do another show? Ken and Patty, you already got recurring roles on Brothers and Sisters. Couldn't you sneak the rest of the guys in there somehow?
You know, it's funny that you should bring that up because I was thinking about that until Peter's weight comment. But, you know, there's probably some, yeah, there's some.
I'll do his role.
Don't you need another cousin?
Yeah.
Cousins.
Uncle, cousins, doesn't matter. That show has revolving relatives. And
That's true.
A couple of people are leaving, and I'd love to see Justin go away. He's such a whiner.
Well, some traditions never end, I guess.
Yeah, bring it on. Okay.
And I wanted to ask, why did Gary leave the show?
Oh, well, that was
lead poisoning, as I recall.
I stuck my hand with a pencil. That was actually set up at the beginning, believe it or not. I had quit acting before 30-something, and the way I decided to do it was Ed said to me at one point, you know, this will never go, and if for some reason it goes, you can direct one of the first six, and if for some strange reason it really hits, we'll kill you off after 4 years. And then... So we cut to year four, and they come up to me, well, Peter, it's time to kill you off. And it was like,
what?
Really? But I don't want to go.
Well, that, you know, it didn't make any sense to me. So I figured it was either a contract dispute or a difference of, you know.
But, you know, I think there was one other factor at the time, actually, because Ed Marshall talked to me about that, which was when they originally gave my character Nancy – this is Patty, sorry – cancer, they really weren't about researching and exploring cancer, what they were really interested in is what would that be like to lose a peer.
Right.
And so when they began the cancer storyline, they had intended, because they talked to me about that would mean that you won't be around that long and are you okay with that? And I was, because the storyline was so interesting to me.
Right.
But they actually ended up getting a lot of mail from people that had cancer, ovarian cancer at the time. And as a symbol, to have my character die was really a difficult thing. Mm. And they had talked, like Peter said, about that way earlier. So I think that's had some of the
someone
decision
had to go.
That, because of what they
someone
wanted.
Had to go.
For what they wanted to explore. But that's the whole thing. Whatever they wanted to explore, that's what
right.
we explored.
You mean the fifth season didn't, the hypothetical fifth season didn't start with Gary in the shower saying it was all a dream?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I lobbied for that, Neil, but for some reason they didn't go for it.
He's going to narrate it like Desperate Housewives.
Will, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking with Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Patricia Wettig, Peter Horton, and Melanie Mayron, all graduates of 30-something. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Four of you in that room directed episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, that was I directed the first one. This is Peter Horton. Like I said earlier, part of my deal was to direct one of the first six. And I'll tell you, the idea of coming to work to direct an episode is in and of itself a bit terrifying. But when you're going to – you always have in the back of your head the knowledge that if it really goes badly, you'll leave and you'll never have to come back.
Shoot you early.
And the idea of coming in there and directing my fellow actors on a new series like this
I never felt that you were nervous at all. How interesting. Well, this is Patty. I because you directed a big episode. Yeah. I never, ever felt nervousness from you. Isn't that interesting?
Well, thank you. I covered it well. But
no,
it also was – I got to – my very first episode, I got to deal with the separation of Elliot and Nancy. And it was Timmy and Patty, which is ended up being one of the strongest, if not, in my mind, the strongest through line of 30-something. So I really got to step into an engine room on that first episode.
It was delicate, Tim Busfield. It was delicate. You know, we had to – it's a very difficult thing to do, to direct, and I had not had that experience. So, you know, these guys were patient with, you know, with the – there were a lot of first-timers directing on that show, and – you know, it's a delicate environment, and it can be a delicate environment. And I'm sure I stepped on toes and made a lot of mistakes. And yet these guys are, you know, we'd hash it out, and there was so much love amongst us as a team.
Yeah, there was such support.
That we were really able to work it out. And, you know, etiquette was very strong amongst us because we'd most come from the theater. So we knew how to address each other on notes and. But there were a couple times. There was a time when Kenny and Patty were at one point the husband wife relationship stepped into the middle of a scene, and I
don't know what he's talking about.
I was
about.
Just sitting there going you guys.
This is what are you referencing when you were directing or when I was.
That's when you were directing. You were in the office.
And, I know, and you cleared the set.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Okay,
Tim said this should not be happening. I think everybody should take 15 minutes and
let Patty and Ken
and
deal
I
with
sorted
their
out the
stuff.
Different dynamics between a marriage and a director-actor relationship. I prevailed.
Oh, all right.
She did whatever I said after that. No, I was just scared. I've been scared for like 20 years since then.
Let me ask you, we have like a minute left. What was your favorite moment in the show? Melanie?
You know, there were a lot of them, but I think the moment and Ken, you directed the episode where Gary died, and that, you know, my character didn't have any lines as a reaction. Ken said, "You just, you know," he said, "just sit here at the piano," and I don't know, for some reason Melissa didn't have anything written into the script, and Ken just sat there with the camera and let it roll, and
that was a beautiful moment.
I just, you know, got emotional with it, but that he took the time in a place that wasn't even written in the script. And so many people over the years have said, you know, when they see us and they meet us, they go, oh, my God, I love that moment.
Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you all so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. You're great, by the way.
Thank you.
We're all fans.
Yeah,
love
big
show.
Fans.
Thanks. Very nice. That's Ken Olin, Timothy Busfield, Patricia Wedding, Peter Horton, and Melanie Mayron. Also, our thanks to the engineer there in our New York bureau had to wrestle all those five people into one little room, Manoli Weatherill. Thanks, Manoli. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about, well, in a way, the parents of those 30-something people, at least their dad, the 50s, early 60s dad who we see on Mad Men or on Revolutionary Road. Is that stereotype accurate or fair? We'll challenge it when we come back right after this. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.